Broadcasting from the Prime Meridian Bank Studios in the capital city of Tallahassee, this is Front Row Knowles with Tom Block and Keith Jones. Front Row Knowles is brought to you by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way.
Hey everybody, Tom Block, Keith Jones with you. Welcome to Front Row Knowles. KJ, how goes it, sir?
I'm celebrating, Tommy. I'm celebrating. Our fan base has every reason to be excited. One Emerson, Eugene Deckerhoff Jr. is being inducted into the Broadcasters Hall of Fame in Florida. And I haven't talked to Gene yet, but I plan on it because he's getting inducted along with Rush Limbaugh. So now we've got royalty living on Vassar.
I made that connection too when I saw who the list was. There's a text thread going around from the radio crew. Jeff Colhane sent it out last night or this morning, wanting to see if the whole crew wanted to go down for Gene's induction day, which I'm trying to pull it up. June 27th down in West Palm. So we may put together a little off-season radio crew trip to support Gene, but that's obviously pretty well deserved for a guy that we both enjoyed working with over the years for a number of years.
Very much so. Very much so. Congratulations, Gino.
And I don't know if they give him the mic though for the acceptance speech. Bet the over.
Yeah, that's why Gene was never asked to MC the Emmys or the Oscars. They didn't want to have a 2-day program.
Conversely, that's why he was asked to do the 24-hour Jerry Lewis telethon back in the day, right? When he used to do that.
He and Miss Anna Johnson. You are exactly correct.
Now that I think about it, he was perfect. Gino, we love you. Congratulations to you on that. All right, we got a good show ahead. The ACC Women's Basketball Tournament is this week, and Aria Masoudi, the voice of the Knowles, will join us. We'll preview the matchup for FSU. They don't play until Thursday. We'll also talk about the Combine with Bob Ferrante, and there was a lot to talk about there, Keith. It was, you know, every time I looked up, boom, somebody else was running really fast for FSU.
Tom, if they had invited me to the Combine, they would have timed me with a sundial.
Yeah, you and me both. You and me both. Here's what I was thinking. And Coach Norvell, he's active on X, you know, and he's tweeting about the speed. And a lot of FSU guys were opening eyes with their 40 time. But if you think back just 6 weeks ago to the portal season, the number one thing FSU went and got in the portal was speed. So on the one hand, they have really fast guys that timed well at the combine. On the other hand, they're going, you know what, we need to have a little more speed and be quicker. And that's what they went and got in the portal. So just imagine how that'll translate and play out in this coming year.
Tom, I read a couple of articles, a couple of published reports. You know, FSU had 12 kids invited to the combine. And they're already looking at next year's combine. And that Florida State will probably have more kids invited than the 12 that went this year. So, yeah, athletes all over the place and some really, really, really good football players in addition to being athletes.
That's the bigger thing. All right, we'll break that down with Bob Ferrante. That's coming up straight ahead. Stay with us here on Front Row Knowles.
Front Row Knowles is presented by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way. Now back to Tom and Keith.
On Front Row Knowles, Tom and KJ with you as we crank open that Earl Bacon Agency hotline, the Earl Bacon Agency ensuring your future together, and say hello to our Osceola insider, Bob Ferrante, who was just back from Indianapolis where he had his stopwatch in tow and he was feverishly recording all the time. No, he was not in Indianapolis, but I know you were paying attention to what went on at the NFL Combine, Bob. So I think in a word, we could all say impressive, or maybe that's my word. So what's your word about what you saw from FSU's athletes up there?
Can you say make a lot of money? Like what, lucrative weekend? Lucrative? Is that the best word? I mean, Braden Fisk is going to make some serious money off that performance. Yes.
Luke, I can't help but chuckle, though, because – Keith, how many times is a D-tackle going to have to run a 40-yard dash in his NFL career?
It's not the point, Tommy. It's not the point. It's just that he can do it.
I'm glad he's not chasing me doing it, because he wouldn't need 40 yards to chase me down. I can tell you that.
And his sideline to sideline is pretty darn good, right? I mean, yeah.
Well, he tested off the charts on everything. And I felt like watching him perform, and he was great at the end of the season. During the season, he maybe didn't make as many splash plays as what we expected, but I know for sure that you and all the media, when August camp started, people went out and watched Fisk, and everybody raved about how quick off the ball he was, just how ridiculous good he was. I mean, that started the first day of the pad, maybe the first day of practice before the pads were on. And it feels like that got validated by what he did in Indianapolis last week.
I think by the end of the fall, you know, by the ACC championship game, a lot of guys were not just worn down, but truly injured. And you know, Braden Fisk was one of those guys who was injured, tried to practice and get ready for that Orange Bowl, could not do it. But yeah, Braden moves unlike, what, 99% of defensive tackles. He should not move that well sideline to sideline, let alone be able to race 100 yards down the field with Mike Norvell, who still thinks he wants to try and beat Braden. Braden's got, it's kind of that cliche thing. Everybody hates using the word motor with a defensive end or a defensive tackle, but what else are you supposed to say? Energy, want, hunger, heart. I mean, he just has not just the skill set physically, but the desire, the want to get after the ball carrier, the quarterback, whoever. I don't know if he's a first rounder or not based on the Senior Bowl, based on the combine, but just the performance he's put out there, what he's been asked to do, who he's been asked to meet. I think he's met everything that they've wanted from him.
Guys, I can't recall. I was thinking about this earlier today. I can't recall a single FSU player that over, what is it, a month's time, 6 weeks' time, the Senior Bowl and the Combine has done as much to improve his draft stock, quote-unquote, after the season. He was great during the season when he was healthy, but I don't know of another kid that has improved their draft stock as drastically in the postseason as he has. Anybody come to your guys' mind?
Ooh, nobody offhand. I mean, I would say maybe a couple of quarterbacks who, just because a team fell in love with a guy based on a personal workout. Like, I think the Bills loved EJ Manuel, how he threw through the wind. They saw that height, the arm strength, those kind of things. Like, they fell in love with that, and he kind of slid up into where they were, I think, middle of that first round. But no, I mean, Braden Fisk, what would he have been a year ago coming off Western Michigan? He might have never been drafted if he stays at Western Michigan. Do people see him?
Does he get invited to the combine?
Exactly. It's and again, the transfer portal is going to get knocked around by everybody. It's good. It's bad. It depends on your viewpoint. Group of five coaches hate it now, right now, for the obvious reasons. But it elevates players who have an opportunity, and you know, Braden's a great example of it to me.
Maybe I just missed the last decade of the NFL Combine. I'm not sure. But when did they start in real time matching up the stats to tell you that of the 4,000 defensive tackles drafted since 1981, he's in the 99th percentile and he would rank 12th out of the – did that just start this year, or has that been going on for years?
I think it's kind of amusing to bring maybe the Combine to the masses. I think a lot of what the NFL Network and some of the NFL does is tries to elevate the sport to more of a mainstream, even like running out Patrick Mahomes' 40 time from whatever it was 5-6 years ago and comping it to other players and him begging them not to do it. But then they keep doing it again and again just to kind of tease and annoy Patrick, but also to show there are some really, really good athletes out there. And we all know Patrick Mahomes is a great athlete too. I think it's kind of goofy, some of what they do, but you got a lot of time to fill too on those NFL Combine broadcasts.
Well, they're finding the second generation and third generation of folks that were the original recruitniks who were following, you know, high school juniors and seniors and listening to 1-900 calls from Tom Block about who FSU was signing. And now they've got the time to watch 24/7 on the NFL network on the next or second or third generation of kids getting to the NFL. They've tapped into that untapped marketplace.
So Braden Fisk obviously was the headliner, but there was a lot of subheads that were still on the first page there for FSU. That clip of Jared Verse just reeling off 31 presses on the bench of 2 1/4, like he was eating a hot dog, just throwing the thing. I mean, it was no big deal. Johnny Wilson, obviously, with his time at that size, Jarian Jones, Deloach opened some eyes, right, with his speed. Let me go, not to be negative Nelly here, but two guys that I don't feel like I heard a lot about are maybe Tatum Bethune, from one. I know not everybody tested a lot. Fabian wasn't a name I was going to say. He didn't do all the testing. Renardo Green wasn't middle of the pack necessarily, but Jarian kind of stole the headlines. I guess the question I'm driving out here, Bob, did anybody hurt their stock by what happened? We've talked a lot about the guys who helped their stock, which seemed to be about everybody.
Yeah, I think there was some initial criticism of say, Keon Coleman, like his 40 time, which we didn't think was going to be impressive. And it wasn't compared to all the other guys. There's some stock cars out there when you look at the receivers around the country. But then Keon runs the gauntlet, which is more of a football drill, and he's showing his ability to turn and run and how he adjusts his body. And you say, well, that's a football player. So I saw a lot of criticism of Keon Coleman. You know, he may not even be an NFL number two receiver. And I just think, are we watching the same games, folks? Because if that's not an NFL number two receiver, okay, make him your third and decide which DB gets to draw the last straw and have to cover that guy for however many snaps he's on the field. So I don't know how many FSU guys are going to be drafted. It feels like, could there be eight? I mean, what's a fair number here? It feels like there's so many guys who are in a good spot. And if you don't get drafted seventh round, I still think it's almost better to be a free agent guy. You can pick and choose your destination and still a nice amount of money. Then you get to pick and choose your spot where you think you can make a roster.
Guys, did I read it correctly? Did Johnny measure the largest wingspan in the history of the combine?
Yes.
That's a big catcher. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then he ran faster than Keon Coleman. You know, we talked to your point about Keon though, Bob, it's not like Keon is 5'11", right? Like Keon is a man. Keon is 6'4", but compared to Johnny Wilson, I don't know what Keon measured at last week. He's 6'3", 6'4", right? But he's not as tall as Johnny. I'm always fascinated by this because at some point the tape has to equate too. And Johnny tested well, and that's great. And he's got that radius, and there's still tape out there of him dropping balls, right? And then Keon didn't test as well, but he damn sure made a lot of contested catches this year and put up a lot of highlights. I was thinking back, I don't know why I looked it up, but Derek Nnadi, you know, who's got 3 rings now with the Chiefs, and maybe it's a fist comparison, right? You got a short defensive tackle there, Nnadi's bigger, but he didn't have a good combine at all. And here he is like 6 years later and 3 Super Bowl rings later with the Chiefs, right? So I don't know. It's not a perfect science, even though it feels like it's getting a little closer to perfect each year. It's still far from there.
I think to some extent, it depends on who drafts you, the stability of the franchise, of the coaching staff. Are they willing to invest in you, the hours, the money, you know, for the long haul? Like Derek Nnadi landed in a great spot. And you look, like, I don't know how to quantify Derek Nnadi, because you look at his stats game to game and year to year, they're not impressive, right? But there's a reason why the Chiefs love him and why he's in their rotation and he's so successful, because they can attract some of the best players because they are so successful and people want to go and win titles. But he clearly is being very effective at doing, you know, what they're asking from him. And I can't be happier for Derek to have landed there. Just a really, really good guy, great personality. And man, we love talking to him whenever we can get him at Florida State. And it's cool to see him have so much success.
It appears that Jordan made a little bit of a splash too, or at least didn't do anything to hurt himself.
I listened to all, I think, 15 minutes or so of Jordan's interview with the media, and I thought he handled himself really, really well. And obviously the headline was that the boot came off and he's happy to be wearing two pairs of shoes and being, he has a timeline. He's looking at May or June. I think that's got a lot of people thinking, well, what does that mean as far as how do NFL teams view you? Do they view you through the short-term lens of you can't hold a workout and you can't really maybe run around and throw, or how are the workouts going to look like if he's even able to stand there and do anything? Maybe he just says, I'm sorry, guys, I can't, but I'm willing to fly in and talk. I think a lot of teams will be won over by the concept of we're drafting a QB2, a guy who's going to learn and can't play him initially. He's not going to be asked to start week one, but we see every week the injury reports around the NFL, the need for really good, smart backup quarterbacks. And I feel like Jordan can do just that. Doesn't have the strongest arm, but he's got that mobility that, you know, people are kind of saying that he's got a little bit of the Jalen Hurts. He's got a little bit of some of those characteristics and traits of successful NFL quarterbacks. Does he get drafted late? Does he go free agent? I don't know, but I feel like he's got, again, those qualities that some NFL teams are going to look at and say, even with the injury, that's a guy we're going to take.
You mentioned 8 draft picks. I'd put the over-under at 9.5. 12 guys were at the combine. Yeah, to your point, if Jordan's not healthy till May, June, yeah, somebody might take him in the 7th round, or he could be a free agent. You know, does Tatum Bethune go undrafted? And then is there one more guy? It's the under. But then you got Akeem Denton, who didn't go. Does somebody like him and take him in the 7th round? But I'd put it at 9.5 or so. Keith, what do you think? I mean, I'd love to see him go 12 for 12, but they're not going to, I don't think.
You know, statistically, it just doesn't work that way. But yeah, no, it wouldn't surprise me if 10, maybe even 11 of them are drafted. Certainly, I think everyone will sign. And that's a far cry from where we've been 3 and 4 and 5 years ago in its own right. I'm just excited for them. I mean, it's just good to see these kids getting the opportunities that they've worked so hard for.
Jaheim Bell is maybe another one, since even though he tested well, he's undersized for a tight end, right? And there's only one of them on the field at a time and maybe 3 on a roster.
I read somewhere where someone was projecting him to be a fullback, maybe.
Yeah, well, H-back, I mean, that's kind of how FSU used him, right? Let's hand him the ball. Let's do all those things. Yeah.
I think that versatility will help him. Yeah, that versatility will help. I mean, the NFL doesn't – some schemes don't even have a fullback on the roster these days. Some might say, well, we want that type of guy for just a 4th and 1 or a goal line, and he can also catch passes as a tight end. Again, with a smaller roster, I think you crave versatility when you're kind of building those rosters.
Bob, real quick here, we got about 2 minutes to go. We'll talk women's hoops with Aria in our next segment. Men's basketball obviously went the wrong direction at Georgia Tech there. Baseball, though, one of just a handful of teams unbeaten. They'll play, we're talking on Tuesday, and the Tuesday game against Gulf Coast was canceled, but they'll play a 4 o'clock game on Wednesday and try to go 11-0. I know the competition's not the toughest, but you have to be impressed with what they've done so far.
Yeah, I think we're all waiting for in a week. They'll go down to Florida. We'll kind of see what does Florida State look like against a top 25 team, and the ACC schedule will crank up too. I think what you have to like is the competitive at-bats. Feels like a deeper pitching staff. Definitely a more veteran, I think, comfortable pitching staff. You know, Cam Leiter's start wasn't great up at Greenville, but it still got Florida State to where it needed to get. I think Link was really scraping to get to 27 outs last year, almost every game. And it doesn't feel like yet he's really had to anything near what they had last year. So I think my only one real question so far is the defense. Is this what they are? You're going to see some errors and it's going to hurt them here and there. Or are those errors something that they can clean up through just, hey, this is sort of the first 10 games. It's almost like a spring training for everybody in college baseball to get warmed up. But the hitting feels like it's there. There's speed on the base paths and a lot of strikeouts on the mound, which means fewer fielding opportunities for the guys in the field too. That's a bonus. it does feel like a better team. I think the asterisk still is, how does it look against Florida, a Clemson, a Notre Dame, those types of schools?
Hey, don't completely underestimate FGCU. They beat Miami midweek last week.
And I saw Florida lost to Stetson a while back. So, hey, anything can happen sometimes.
College baseball, I mean, that's what baseball is, right? That'll happen. That's actually one of the things that 11 rarely had happen. They didn't stumble under 11. If you look at his career on midweek games, I mean, you know, and wouldn't even have a debate about it, but there's other teams, maybe they're tinkering a little bit more and they stumble sometimes in the midweek. 11's teams never did. Of course, now Florida's a midweek game, so maybe that would be the exception. I'm thinking more of the Gulf Coast of the world. All right, Bob, we'll let you get rolling. Thank you, sir.
Take care, guys.
All right, we'll have more Front Row Noles right after this.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Noles podcast and follow at Front Row Noles on Twitter. Now back to at underscore Tom Block and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
Back on Front Row Noles, thanks as always to Bob Ferrante, and he cleared out, but we keep the Earl Bacon Agency hotline open and say hello to Aria Masudi, who is the voice of Florida State women's basketball and the voice of lots of other things. If you're a Noles fan, you've seen Aria and listened to Aria's work for many years now. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Tom. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to be a part of the show.
Yeah, we appreciate it. He is coming to us from parts unknown, other than we can confirm it's in Greensboro, North Carolina somewhere. Where I'm sure is, never mind, I won't even put you in that predicament to ask what kind of welcome you received on Tobacco Road, given circumstances. But I will say this. Tell us what you've covered this women's team. You've covered lots of these women's teams over the years. What do you like about this team? Kind of give us a thumbnail sketch.
Yeah, you know, I think this team is different from the years past in that they score the basketball in an elite clip. And that's not always been the case. Since, you know, Bill Ferrara got here, it's year two for him as the associate head coach. And we move pretty fast. The ladies like to run. They want to get into the 80s in possessions, and they want to play games in the 80s and the 90s on the scoreboard. So that's been different. They launch a lot of threes. And on the nights that the threes go in, you know, it's been a pretty fun game to call. And other nights, you know, when they're a little icier from beyond the arc, it becomes a challenge for them. But overall, you know, another year of Tania Latson, Tom, and seeing KK Timpson turn into a legitimate star. She was named first team all ACC for her efforts. Omaria Gordon's healthy. That's been nice. And seeing Sarah Bajetti really turn into the best version of herself here in her final year. I think when those four are clicking, and you guys have watched some of the games and covered some of the games, they can beat anybody when they've got those four going at a high level.
I think, Ari, the other thing that Florida State fans are most excited about is going into the tournament last year, nobody was healthy. And now you've got your guns full, and you got all your bullets, and now's a good time to discharge it.
I agree, KJ. You nail it. Last year we were kind of limping to the finish, and not having Tania Latson is a big deal, right? And so last year we were a shell of ourselves, and it looked that way. So this year I think we're a year older, a year more seasoned. A lot of those players came back that saw the way the year ended last year, and Tania Latson being healthy makes all the difference in the world. So the bracket sets up pretty favorably here in Greensboro for Florida State to make a run. And I think a big weekend here in the ACC tournament could position Florida State for a decent seed as they move into March Madness and beyond.
Let's talk a little bit more about Tania. I don't know how I could say that she's under the radar. She's certainly not for people who follow women's college basketball. But in general, the career she's putting together, Aria, is remarkable. I mean, what's maybe the most impressive part about her game? You've seen her for 2 years, and then we'll continue, and I'll drop some stats on you.
I think her athleticism, you know, in the women's game isn't easy to find. You know, you have the Caitlin Clarks of the world, and there are certainly talented players all around women's game right now, and I think it's getting better and better with every year. But Tania's pure athleticism I haven't seen from the 7 years that I've called Florida State women's basketball, and it's pretty rare. She's awesome. And the three-level scoring at the rim, mid-range, her ability to stretch from beyond the arc. And then I think I love how humble she is as a person more than anything. She is, just one of the teammates, right? And she's just one of the players, and that's how she acts. She treats everyone the same, and she's so friendly. And I love the way that she goes about her business. Every day she sets the tone, whether that's, in practice, the way that she goes about her routines, she's locked in always. And I think that's what, to me, makes her so special. It's the talent, but also the way she goes about her business. And it's not that common to see from a player that young, right? She's still only a sophomore, and her best basketball is ahead of her. I think we've thrown the stardom on her at such a young age that she's still growing into it. So that's probably been the most impressive part for me.
All right, so now we get to the numbers game here, Arya. I'm sure you've done the math. We have to go back to KJ's era because this is when she played. But an FSU Hall of Famer and Stu Gale Contis is the all-time winning leading scorer for women's hoops, right? I just looked it up, 2,323 points. And then you look at the men's side, and Bobby Surra is at the top of that list with 2,130 points. Now, you just said she's not even through with her sophomore year. But she's got 1,279 points, and I don't have to pull out my calculator to multiply by two and know that she's on pace to surpass both of the names I just mentioned, which goes back to my original point that I don't know that the average FSU fans know that we might be watching, at least from a scoring standpoint, the best player in the history of women's basketball on this team right now.
Spot on. And I
FSU
think
women's basketball, if I didn't say that, FSU women's
right.
basketball.
And that to me is worth the price of admission alone. And I think, Tenaya is worth coming to watch. I wish the crowds would be a little bit bigger. We have a pretty, boisterous fan base. I think the ones that come have made a difference. Like even Sunday against Clemson on senior day, it was loud in the Tuck. And what I've noticed, and Tom, I love the guys, and I've covered the men's basketball program, but you guys have watched this too. KJ, you've called it for a long time. The Tuck isn't very involved in the men's games for large portions of that game, even if it has 9 or 10,000 fans. Like it's fans sitting on their hands until something good happens. But the women, it might only be 2,500, but they're into it with every possession and every stop. They're trying to will their team to get a stop. And that was something I was making a comment to Coach Brooke about, after the game, was like, the ones that have been loyal to you, they will ride or die with you. And you feel that with every possession. And that to me has been so cool to watch. So do I wish that there were more? Yeah. I hope that, maybe our record could be a little bit better. Maybe we could stay in the top 10, top 15 of the rankings long enough to be able to generate the buzz. And that's just the reality, I think, of women's sports right now is, people don't go to women's sports unless they're winners, unless they're champions, or unless you have like a Caitlin Clark that's, marketable person. So for the most part, you got to win games to be able to get people. Soccer and softball did it. That's why they've got the crowds that they do at Florida State. So hopefully we can do that, because Tenaya deserves, in my opinion, the attendance, the crowd, and the eyes. She may get that though, Tom, before the end of her career. I think she's got two more seasons, like you mentioned. She may get that.
All right, the number that jumps out at me about Latson is kind of buried, but she's averaging almost five assists in conference play. Now that to me is not a selfish shooter. That's someone that knows her game, knows what shots she's best at, but is willing to give the ball up if someone's got a better look.
Definitely. And KJ, that's a good observation, because that was part of what she wanted to get better at going into her sophomore year. Year one, she was telling me that she was getting adjusted to the speed of the game. And once she mastered the speed of the game, it was, how do I master defensive game plans now targeting me every single game? I get numbers thrown at me on the defensive side, they flood to me, and that's an adjustment. And this year she's figured out, it took a while, but I think once conference play hit, she realized she could draw defenders and get them to collapse. And she's got shooters around her. And she's got KK Timpson down low, who is a double-double machine. And Tom, here's a stat for you. She needs a double-double to break Natasha Howard's single-season double-double record. She's tied, and just one more will do that. So I think Naya has learned that to be the best possible player, you have to be able to get your teammates involved. Let the game come to you. That's a sign right there. When players say, "I'm just letting the game come to me," that's what they mean. It's, they can get their points, but they understand that getting your teammates involved ultimately helps the betterment of the team in the grand scheme.
And Timpson's doing it on the offensive end, but she is a force defensively. Forgive me, guys. I actually did a little homework. 81 blocks on the season. She's averaging 9.7 rebounds. She's had a remarkable year, as evidenced by that first team All ACC selection.
She has defensive player, all ACC defensive team. And she has, I think, been the unsung hero of this basketball team this season. Florida State, you know, they lost Mariana Valenzuela to a knee injury in the summer. Weren't able to truly get a post to come in, you know, a center, anyone 6'4" or 6'5". They're still trying to bring Avery Treadwell along. And KK's typically the undersized post that's having to go up against other teams' beasts, so to speak. And she's done more than hold her own. And defensively, she's got a mean streak on the defensive side. She'll let you know if she blocked you. And I think she's closing in on the single season block record. And hopefully we get enough games so that she can do it. But she has been the unsung hero. I wish I could have voted for her as most improved in the conference 2 years running, because she took another major jump. And I think that's a future pro that, you know, people think Taniya Latson and pretty much talk about Taniya as a future pro. I think KK Timpson will be playing professionally for a very long time as well.
Heath, is it a slow week at the College of Business if you did homework? What's going on there?
I'm getting ready for spring break, Tommy. Getting ready for spring break.
Yeah, you just played the recording from last semester for your students is what you did, right? We're talking with Aria Masudi, the voice of FSU women's basketball. Hey, Aria, Brooke was obviously a star player here and then a longtime assistant even before you started the call in the games on radio. But that said, you've seen the transition firsthand of her from the top assistant to being the interim coach when Sue took a leave to being the permanent head coach or the full-time head coach. How have you seen her grow? How has she matured, changed, grown into this role?
Tom, she's someone that I admire so greatly and have a lot of love for, not just from what she's battling on the court, but what she's dealing with, you know, off the court. I mean, let's think about what Brooke has been dealing with since she took over the job. She was the interim during the COVID year. She's battling this wave of NIL and transfer portal that has just popped into the college game over the last couple of seasons. It hasn't been an easy run. And then she's got her own personal health issues that she's trying to deal with too. It hasn't been smooth sailing, right, for her. And somehow she continues to keep Florida State relevant and playing at a high level and in the conversation every year. Seeing her go from that fun assistant coach to an associate coach always has kind of been a person you want as the face of a program. And now it's hers. Seeing the day-to-day where she's got to be good cop and bad cop at times, seeing how she puts games plans together, hires assistant coaches, goes about keeping a positive attitude for her team, you know, in the peaks and valleys of a year. That has been incredible. She's always positive, Tom. Like, that to me is amazing. Like, there's no bad days. At least if she has them, she doesn't show them to the people around her. And so that's what I've noticed. She's a brilliant mind. She's gonna be a star, I think, in this industry. And just praying for her to get healthy fully so that she can focus once again on just the basketball and just the coaching and the schedule that surrounds, you know, running a program every day at a D1 level.
There's an old phrase that is forgotten and not used very much, and Brooke represents – in fact, she represented this when Sue recruited her. That phrase is that she's an old soul. She's very grounded. She's very dependable. She gets the big picture. She can be excitable, but she doesn't get too high. She never gets low because she's always got that great attitude. One of the best compliments my dad would ever give anybody when he was alive is he would refer to someone as an old soul. And Coach Brooke is an old soul by that definition.
She is. And I think it's so necessary, KJ, right, to running a program and being able to stay even keeled, because everyone around you wants to jump for joy at the peaks and they want to jump off a cliff at the valley. And so to speak, it's everything's great or everything's bad. And usually you guys both know this from having covered sports for such a long time. You're never as good as you think, and you're never as bad as you think. You're usually somewhere in the middle. And I think
it's always in the middle, Aria. It's always in the middle.
It is, even though fans, and we fall into the fan category sometimes, we fail to remember that because the highs are so good in sports and the lows in sports can crush you. So I love watching her go to work and her, you know, after big wins, she won't come on the post-game radio show and do all this as if we've won a national title. And when we lose, we have another opportunity in the next game. And that's something Mike Norvell has as well. And I know that Coach Norvell and Brooke talk and are friends and keep in touch. So very cool to see that parallel between the two. And we're going to need that right here in the postseason. I'm going to need someone to keep me even keeled because we're at the point of the year where the highs are either going to be really high or the lows are going to end your year. And we're all going to be looking forward to for the next year.
Yeah, that is the blessing and the curse of sports. Aria, we'll let you go on this, but they have Wake Forest Thursday night, I mean, how's this tournament set up? What do you think is possible here in Greensboro?
Yeah, so Tom, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, do they play the winner of Wake in Virginia? Or did
Aria, this is why I asked you the question.
Yes.
But hold
okay,
on.
Good.
It is the winner of Wake in Virginia.
Okay. Tom, you're 50% right. It could be Wake. I think we're all hoping that it's Wake. The way Virginia is playing right now,
yeah,
they're kind of ascending under a coach who goes by Coach Mox, and she's like a rising star as well in the basketball world, in the coaching ranks. Both teams are going to be challenging. Wake has given us problems in the past. It would be deja vu from last year, and I don't know that I want to relive the Wake game from the tournament last year. And it's a Virginia team that beat us, and I don't know what to think right now in terms of what's going to happen. The best version of Florida State should advance and go to the quarterfinals, where Syracuse would await, right? And Syracuse is a very beatable three that Florida State was up 17 on in the third quarter, up in their place earlier this year. And they have a star player by the name of De'Asia Fair who hit 9 threes against us, and maybe 6 of them came in the second half. They ended up coming back to beat us. So I know there's some unfinished business feelings there, but the side of the bracket lines up well. Virginia will be a tough matchup because they are ascending on their season right now. They're playing good basketball, and they just beat Virginia Tech to close the season out on their senior day. Wake Forest, again, will test Florida State's ability to be able to lock in and be able to play Seminole basketball. For hitting shots, guys, I like our chances against anybody. If we're not hitting shots, you know, it's been a struggle at times for us this year. So I hope that previews it the best I can.
That can be said for anybody. Hopefully we're hitting shots. Aria, have fun at the tournament, and keep doing what you do.
Absolutely, guys. Tom, KJ, appreciate you always.
Thank you, sir.
All right, we'll have more Front Row Noles coming up right after this.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Noles podcast and follow @FrontRowNoles on Twitter. Now back to @_TomBlock and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
On Front Row Noles, thanks to Aria Masudi for joining us. Appreciate his insight. I think it's cool that Florida State may have the all-time leading scorer on its roster right now. We'll see. There's a lot of basketball left. But, Keith, here's one thing we have not talked about yet. College football, aside from lawsuits and conference realignment and SEC Big Ten takeover and all that, the one thing college football has apparently decided it really needs is a 2-minute warning in the first and second half like the pro game. Because even though we tried to speed up the game last year, we've now come to the conclusion that after further review, let's just stick a 2-minute timeout in there in the first and second half. What do you think, Keith?
I will be surprised if they actually implement it. I understand it being talked about. But that was one thing, Tommy, that was talked about when I was playing ball, and it was probably something that was talked about the year after the NFL instituted it at the college level. And it's been basically rejected throughout all this time. I thought you were going to go with the, now that we have enough money, sarcasm, Shelton, now that we have enough money, then we're going to put the radios in the helmet so that the coach can talk to the quarterback instead of sending the signal into plays.
Well, let's come back to that. Here's my solution for they're arguing, and I can kind of see this a little, that the 2-minute warning will line up the TV timeouts. Because in the pro game, if you think about it, you do get the TV timeout at the 2-minute warning. And then you're kind of there for the rest of the 2-minute drive because the clock doesn't stop after first down. In the college game, it's disjointed. Anyway, whether you buy that or not, they need the college basketball rule. All right. If you get 3 timeouts at the start of the game, you can only carry 2 to the second half, whether you use it or not, right? Or maybe you only get 2 now that you have the 2-minute warning. I mean, there are ways they could solve this if they want to institute it. But to your point, that was just my editorial there, my 2 cents. So when they go that route, you can say that you heard it here first on Front Row Noles. I don't have a huge thought one way or the other on the helmet communication. I don't know. Mike Norvell was not in favor of it when he was asked about it a few months ago. You know, he sort of likes the gamesmanship that goes with, hey, our signs have got to be better than your sign stealers. That's part of the game.
Yeah, but the argument against it was that we didn't have enough money and teams didn't have money to do it. In light of all the money we're awash in right now, oh, yeah, we can go ahead and do it. That's what's ironic to me.
Well, I think the SEC and the Big Ten have lobbied that their schools will be allowed to have three guys on the field with helmet communication, and the ACC and Big 12 will only get two.
Two.
Group of Five only allowed one player on the field with the helmet communication. Didn't I read that, or am I conflating and confusing things?
You're conflating, and you stay confused.
Well, that's really the biggest story, Keith. I mean, we all know that the Big and the SEC are going to get more teams into the playoff than anybody. We have to mandate it. I mean, we went from the beauty contest, which was always going to side with the big boys of the SEC and the Big Ten, to that's not enough. Now we just got to ensure that our beautiful is truly more beautiful and we're going to get them in. And on top of it, our league deserves a bye.
You know, there's a part of me that is old school that will not be anything new for our listeners. You know, if you are that good, why are you arguing for automatic buys? Aren't you basically saying we don't think we're going to be good any longer?
Yeah. The answer to your question is because they can.
Understood.
And because they will get what they're arguing for. That is the answer to the question.
Understood.
But I hear you. I hear you. Anyway. When we're on the other side of the fence and we're either in the SEC or the Big, these conversations will be a lot more enjoyable, Keith.
By the way, the court date was set on, if they hear it in Leon County, for end of March, 1st of April. I shouldn't have bring it up if I don't have the date.
I feel like the North Carolina one is later this month, and April 9th sticks in my head for the Leon County one for some reason.
But, you know, that whole – circus is going to keep us entertained over at least the early part of the summer, I would think.
Well, I'm pretty sure the tent is probably up or going up right behind right field and Hauser Stadium. The circus tent will be up and we can let the circus begin, Keith. This circus, however, is over until next week when we'll reconvene for Front Row Knowles. Have a good week, AJ.
You too.
So long, everybody.